This has been an unusual day as far as attendance is concerned. I could count at least 10 this morning that are normally here that were not here today. But you know, when we think about those that are not here and we wish each one was, let's not forget to be appreciative of the ones that are here. Even if our attendance sometimes is not what we would want it to be, let's just be thankful for what we have and then work to have more. But I appreciate each one of you. Tonight we are continuing in our series from Luke 15. We have had, I think, 6 lessons before and have 3 more after this one. We still are to discuss the Father, the way down and the way up, and then what the prodigal did or did not do or did not say. I think tonight's lesson may be the most important lesson in the chapter for those of us that are here. We've talked about the lost coin and how that represents one that's lost in the house. We've talked about the lost sheep, how that represents one that's gone astray, not really into a lot of overt sin, but just simply not where he needs to be. We've talked about the prodigal son, the one that really left and went out into sin, and how he came back home. Tonight, we're talking about the elder brother. I think sometimes we tend to overlook this part of the chapter. Beginning at verse 25 and going through the rest of the chapter, we have these words. Now the elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, Thy brother is come. Thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he has received him safe and sound. And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answering said to his father, Lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandments. And yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured the living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. And he said unto him, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It is meet or fitting that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. First, let's think about what qualities this young man had that were good. Both boys had problems, but they represent different ideas. The prodigal had the problem of going away from home and needing to come back. The older one had the problem of staying at home and yet not really having the right kind of attitude, especially toward his brother. As I analyze this passage that we've just read, I see at least 4 things about this young man that were qualities that are to be admired. First, he seems to have been a good man. There is nothing in the context, in the chapter, that indicates that he had been immoral in any way, that he had been dishonest in any way, or that he'd been indecent in any way. There's really nothing said either way, but there's no reason to believe other than the fact that this young fellow, or this older son, was a good man, that he had good qualities, probably had integrity and honesty, decency. In the second place, the evidence is that he was a hard worker. He indicates that he was working for his father, and you'll notice as it begins to talk about him, it says that he was in the field. Even at the very point that the younger one came back home, the older brother was out in the field. He was where he was supposed to be. as far as his responsibility was concerned. The younger man had shirked his responsibility and left, but the older one had stayed at home. He was a hard worker, which also indicates that he'd stayed close to his family. He may have been the child that never caused any worry for his father or mother, whereas anyone that loves a son would be concerned and even worry about the younger one that had left. But every indication is that this son had stayed at home, that he was faithful to his father, faithful to his mother, I would assume, and stayed close to his family. It also indicates that he was not involved in riotous living. Now, he accused his brother of being involved in riotous living, and every indication is that he was living a good moral life, that he had treated people as he ought to treat them, that he had respect for women, that he had respect for men, that he was not involved in riotous living and even would have condemned and been against those who were involved in that kind of living. That describes a pretty good fellow if you stop and think about it. If you could say about someone that he was a good man, he was a hard worker, he was close to his family and a family person, and that he was not involved in riotous type living, that would be a pretty good description of a person. And yet there are some indications in this chapter that this son had a problem that may have been as bad as far as the end result is concerned, as the problem that his brother had. Now let me suggest to you what I see here as problems that he had. Even though a good man, a hard worker, close to his family, a good moral person seemingly, here are some of the problems that he had. Number one, anger. Look at verse 28. It says he was angry. You remember Ephesians 4:26 says, let not the sun go down on your wrath. Be you angry and sin not. He may have had a reason to be somewhat angry at his brother. But evidently he let that anger continue and get out of control. I have determined that anger never does you any good. I had more trouble with controlling my temper when I was younger. I think I've pretty well got my temper under control now. Not perfect, but much more so than when I was younger. And most of you can probably say that too. But have you ever experienced anything good when you let a bad temper take over and you lost control of the situation? Anger is just not going to help us in any way. I jokingly told someone, it may have been some of you the other day, that I've set a day in the year 2025 that I'm going to get mad. I deserve it. And so I'm just going to take me a day and get mad. Till then, I haven't got time to get mad. I haven't found anything that's better off with a person getting mad. There are some things that happen that I detest. There are some things in the work of the church that bother me tremendously. But what's going to help if we get mad about it? Anger is just not very helpful. Along with that, I would characterize this man as being hateful. He wouldn't go in. I'll show him. I'm not going to even go in. But from his father's son, we're rejoicing that your brother's home. I'm not going in. Does he remind you of the person who has a bat and a ball and you choose up to play, and if he doesn't get the pitch, he takes his bat and ball and goes home? And sometimes I've noticed that there are members of the church that are just downright hateful in what they say to somebody else and in what they say about someone else. Is that ever going to do any good? If you say something out of spite, if you say something that is childish, now, I didn't say childlike, but childish, what good is that going to do? Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13:11, when I was a child, I spake as a child, understood as a child, thought as a child. When I became a man, I put away childish things. And yet just a few verses later, in the 20th verse of the next chapter, he says, in malice be ye children, but in understanding be ye men. He said there are some qualities of a child that you need to keep. And he particularly mentioned malice, don't hold a grudge. But he said in understanding you need to mature and grow up. And the Hebrew writer in chapter 5 says we need to get to where we can digest the meat and not just the milk of the gospel. This elder brother had a problem of being hateful. We ought to be able to say anything that we want to say to one another in our families and in the church without being hateful. I can be just as firm, you can be just as firm in our dealings with one another. You can say something that I might not like, or I can say something that you might not like, but I don't have to be hateful about it. This young man said, I'm not going in. I'm not going to have any part whatsoever to do with this. I think he was just sort of hateful. I've seen people like that in the church, haven't you? If you don't do it my way, I'm not coming back. I'll go somewhere else. Now, if it's doctrinal, that's a different matter. We need to think about what to do in a case like that to support the truth, whatever it takes. But if it's something that I just don't like, and I'll admit to you, there have been a lot of things done in the work of the church that I didn't think at that point was the best way to go. And if I'd had the opportunity to make the decision, I would have done something differently. But am I going to be hateful about it and talk to people about it in that way? That never accomplishes anything. I think we see an element with this man of selfishness. Yes, he had been at home. He had been a hard worker. He had stayed with his father and worked in his fields. But notice in verse 29, he says, I have served you. I have served you. Pointing out what he had done. His father knew what kind of service he had given. And yet at this point, on this occasion, he was concerned about promoting himself and downgrading his brother. He was selfish in saying, I have served you. You know, selfishness was what got the rich man in trouble in the story of the rich man and Lazarus. Selfishness is what got the rich farmer in trouble when he had the great harvest, tore down his barns and built. Wasn't anything wrong with the harvest. And I don't believe there was anything wrong with the rich man being rich. But it was the selfishness that they had in each of these cases. I think that's one of the factors that caused the rich young ruler not to follow Jesus. You remember he went away sorrowful because he was very rich? He wanted everything evidently for himself. This man indicates to his father, I've been your slave. And now you don't even give me little things and you're doing all of this celebration when my brother has come back home. Selfishness is what causes us to think about the Lord's work from the standpoint of have to instead of want to. For us to think about what we do as duty instead of privilege and opportunity. This man was selfish. I also see an idea here of a superiority attitude. He said, I have never transgressed thy commands. Do you think there's ever been a child that kept his father's commands perfectly? I'm about the only one that ever did that, you see. None of us has ever done that. I tried to do what my dad and mother told me, but there were times that I made mistakes, just like you have. But on this occasion, he was trying to defend himself. Well, I've lived for you. I've never made any mistakes. I'm not like other men, especially I'm not like this other son that's come home. I'm not like him. And he didn't put it into these words, but I think he was saying, I'm better than he is. An inferiority complex is bad, and a superiority complex is bad. The superiority complex is warned about in Romans 12. A man ought not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think. Now, I would hasten to say we ought not to think more lowly of ourselves than we should, and sometimes that causes problems in the other direction. But I don't know of many things that can get in the way of friendship and the right kind of relationship anymore than leaving the attitude that you think you're better than somebody else. We just don't like that. Even the younger ones in school do not appreciate a person who thinks he knows everything, thinks he's a little bit better than everybody else. Maybe doesn't want to associate with other people because he's afraid to get his clothes dirty if he does. I think this man had a problem with a superiority complex. I also see a bit of jealousy on his part. Jealousy is not always bad. God is a jealous God, and the word itself means that one wants what he deserves. Jealousy, as a technical word, is a good word, but the way we use it is not that way in our normal conversation, and as indicated here. He said, "You never gave me a kid. Look what you're doing for him. Look at the catted, the fatted calf." I've done that before, the catted faff instead of the fatted calf. "Look at the fatted calf that you've killed for him. You wouldn't even give me a kid." I doubt that that statement was true. I'm speculating. But I would doubt that his father had not gone through all this time that the brother had been gone without supporting his son at home and giving him what he needed to have the right kind of relationship with his friends. And you know, sometimes we exaggerate things and we'll say, "Well, I've never done that," or "I will never do that." And you've heard "never say never," and that's pretty good advice. Never's a long time. He says, "You have never given me a kid, a goat, a little goat, that I might have a party or a barbecue with my friends." He shows his jealousy as he thinks about that. You may be reminded of another time when there was jealousy on the part of Peter as Jesus was talking to John. We have mentioned many times that story where Jesus told Peter to feed his sheep. And he looked and he saw John standing there and he said, "Well, what about him?" And Jesus said, "What is it to you if he lives till I come?" He didn't say he would live till he came, but he said, "What is it to you?" In other words, Peter, we're not talking about John, and my relationship to John doesn't determine my relationship to you. I'm telling you what I want you to do. But Peter seems to have been a little bit jealous of John. It would appear from a study of the Jewish history that this older son still had 2/3 of his father's inheritance left. The older son got a double portion. And probably when the younger son left, he got 1/3 if his father gave him everything that was supposed to go to him. And so this son had that much left. In fact, his father said, "Remember, everything I've got belongs to you. I'm not taking anything away from you and giving it back to him. He's already spent his. Everything I've got belongs to you." And yet he was jealous of one calf that was killed to make merry with his brother. And then I think he had a problem of harsh judgment. Or to put it another way, rushing to judgment. Notice he says in verse 30, "When this one which has destroyed thy living with harlots and has killed, you've killed for him the fatted calf." I don't have any reason to disagree with the conclusion that the older brother drew, that that's the kind of life that his younger brother had lived. But the scripture doesn't tell us. But look at his attitude of judgment. We have a tendency to condemn any kind of judgment. People will say, if you disagree with them, "Well, you're judging me." God does not condemn judgment. He says, "Judge not that you be not judged," and then turns right around and says, "There is a way in which you judge in dealing with the beam and then with the mote." He didn't say you shouldn't be concerned about the mote in your brother's eye, but first take care of the beam in your own eye. Be careful about your judgment. Sometimes we judge harshly, and we have a tendency to judge before all the facts are in. I think that probably happened here. He made the accusation, but how could he have known the kind of life that his brother had lived? Evidently, the father had not known the kind of life that the son had lived until he came back home. I think the older brother was assuming that that's the kind of life that he lived and came to a conclusion and made the judgment. We are told in Romans 7, or in John 7, verse 24, to judge righteous judgment. Not that it's wrong to judge, but to judge righteous judgment. Righteous judgment would demand at least two things: getting the facts together, and then sorting those facts in a way to understand them. This elder brother had not done that, evidently. He had just jumped to the conclusion that this is what his younger brother had done, and so he made the accusation against them. How many times have you heard that happen in the work of the church, in the community, in your family? And usually the person who's making that judgment will say, "Well, now I got it from a reliable source." And maybe even like the one who said, "I'd better hush, I've already told you more than I heard." We are guilty many times of making a judgment that's not right because we don't have all the facts. Haven't you had times that you thought you knew everything about the situation and found out later you didn't? That you thought you had everything you needed to decide what the situation was and then found out later you didn't? And maybe sometimes made a harsh judgment without meaning to. Jonah made a harsh judgment about Nineveh. And it's interesting that there is something about Jonah that's like this elder brother. Jonah was sad when Nineveh repented. Did you ever thought about that? He's the one that went to tell them to repent, and then when they repented, he was sad. I think Jonah thought they would not repent, and he could say to God, "I told you so." But they repented, and Jonah was so sad that he was just about to give up completely. Read the last chapter in the book of Jonah and you'll see that. This young man was sad even though his brother had come home. Who would not be happy to have a brother that's been gone come back home? Who would not be overjoyed to know that a brother in the flesh who'd been gone for some time, I don't know how long, had come back home? But the elder brother was sad. You ever seen a situation where some in the church seemed to be a little bit sad that an erring brother had come back home? And maybe was not ready to forgive and sort of put that erring brother on a trial basis to see if he really means what he says? Now, I'm not lessening the importance of repentance and action on the part of one like the younger son. And I don't see anything in this passage that indicates that the younger son came back and just slipped in on the back seat at home and said nothing and just his family discovered all of a sudden he's back. That's what happens sometimes with erring members of the church. They'll be gone for 6 months and then they'll just start attending again. Never say a thing about confessing their wrong. Just happen back in and think everything ought to be all right. I don't see that with the younger son. But I don't see an attitude of forgiveness with the elder son. He was not ready to forgive. He was not ready to rejoice. He was not ready to be happy. The father was happy. His friends were happy. They were having a joyful occasion, eating together and celebrating the fact that this young man was back home, but not the elder brother. He wasn't going to have anything to do with that. He was sad that his own brother had come back home. When I study this man, especially these six qualities of anger, hateful, selfishness, superior attitude, jealous, judgmental in the wrong way, I wonder if he was not just as bad in some ways or worse than the younger boy. There's no question the younger boy had gotten into a lot of trouble. He had gone out into sin. There's no question about it. But here's the good man, the hard worker, that stays at home, and look at the attitude that he has. This is why I said at the beginning of the lesson that this lesson may be more important to me and perhaps to you than any of the other lessons in this series. I don't anticipate that any of us that are here tonight are going to go out in riotous living. It could happen, but I don't anticipate that. I don't think that will happen to me. Unless I lose what little mind I've got, I don't think I'm going to go out and get involved in riotous living. But I can be guilty of the same attitude that this older brother had. I can be guilty of jealousy and harsh judgment, selfishness. I might even be guilty of a superiority complex. I might even allow myself to feel anger and be hateful in my words to others. And that's the kind of idea that I believe I've got to work against. I don't think I'll be like the sheep. I don't anticipate just quitting attending and quitting being involved in the work of the church. I don't think I'll be like the coin. Be there, but not use my talents, not be ready to do anything that's needed. But if I'm not careful, I could have one or more of these bad qualities that the older brother had. And I think there's a great lesson there for us. We ought to always rejoice when someone who's done wrong makes it right. And we ought to be willing to share what we have. I wish that older brother had come and said, "You mean my brother's back home? Let me get there as soon as I can and welcome him." And then maybe turn to his father and said, "Now, Father, I know that everything that you have is mine. But if I need to share with my brother, if he's really back home and needs help, I'm ready to help him." Don't you wish the older brother had said something like that? He didn't, but you and I can in our relationships with one another. And I just ask each one of us, and that includes me, to think about the attitudes that we have in the work of the church. Sometimes attitude does more harm in the church than overt actions. Let's try to not be like the older brother. If you in any way have violated God's will in a way that needs to be in a response tonight, or if you need to be baptized into Christ, come as together we stand and sing.
Would you live for Jesus and be always pure and good? Would you walk with Him?